here we are. You know something? Most of you wouldn't have watched it, so I have to tell you, because you should have been watching me. That's the way to do it. Let me watch the rest of the television. CBS 60 Minutes did a repeat of what they say produced more mail than any other program they ever did. When Maury Schaefer, that's the name in it? Schaefer. What is it? Who? I'm more confused now than I was. Safer. There ain't nothing safe about him. Stafer. S-A-F. Safer? What a misnomer. Safer, is that it? Was Maury right? Morley. Well, I don't know these fellows very well. Morley Safer. Went to the NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, Circus for Jesus. It made me mad, you know, that I had to agree with so much of what he observed, you know. He found those that were that little wind-up talking parrot. He asked about Jews and Muslims and Catholics. Got the same answer every time. They accept Jesus as their Savior. God prohibited from saving anyone that pea brain could not define. Not Safer. I was on Safer's right side there. But the thing that I noticed, they really love to exploit religion to get the ratings to make money. That's all they're doing. Pot calling the kettle black. I'm glad I don't go to those religious sideshows. They had the Lord's Airline with a little chapel in it where Christians could fly together and worship together, get closer to God together on the Lord's Airline. Then there was a guy who golfs for Jesus. I mean, that one was really... And Morley asked him how you related golf and Christianity. And he said, well, you know, I sometimes relate it to the 23rd Psalm, green pastures, beside still waters. But he says, of course, you hope you're not going to get in them if you're playing golf. And I thought that really made a great... profound impact for the kingdom's sake. Hell, I golf for fun, not for Jesus. By the way, I noticed the NRB was getting very liberal, too. You know, got to recognize a few points about them, because it seemed to me like they had a large percentage of homosexuals giving lectures on how to write letters. Didn't realize they had become so open-minded, so... But That rather surprised me. Then there's one guy there saying, now, the way you write letters to get money is you got to write like you're writing your granny, or like your granny would write to you. I wonder if Paul thought that through when he wrote his letters. Paul, an apostle, not of men, neither by man, but by granny. It's a shame Paul didn't get to go to the NRB, isn't it? Then they had those computers that write, if they only signed the letters, I think it was $50,000 an hour. Maybe it's more than that. Got this delicate little computer that can write the letter for you and then sign your name. Lord, you realize how thick this Bible would have been if Paul had that? And they had all kinds of trinkets. I mean, trinkets galore. CBS knows a good thing when they see it. I mean, they got more mail from that special, they said, than anything they've ever done on 60 Minutes. So they played it again. Make some money. That's the name of the game. Takes one to know one. CBS was in the right place. The thing that encouraged me is CBS went. I didn't. Morley, I knew better than to go there. That sort of cheered my day up to watch that until Morley started pontificating on the end. Wonder what Jesus would think of all this. Well, he'd think what the rest of us think. He had sense. But that wasn't the point he was making. The point he is making, if Jesus were here, it'd be like Mother Teresa. I'm sure I'm going to tread on some sensitive nerves. I used to really be impressed with missionaries. They were able to con all these comfortable Americans on how terrible it was. I remember as a boy, they'd always come in, the missionaries, tell how awful it was with the bugs and the snakes and the worms and the maggots and the... until I went to the mission field. To each his own, you know. I hope I got an audience that's smart enough to realize that some people get great ego kicks out of being martyrs. I admire Mother Teresa, but she's not the only one in the world. I've been in Calcutta. There are other people who serve God there. I just will not allow somebody to act like, now I don't have any truck with the NRB. As far as I'm concerned, they're a mass of pontifical cowards that don't really care about the issues of Christianity and are a political machine trying to stroke and smooth and slobber and do anything they can do to further their own ends, which is make a lot of money on the television stations and radio stations that they own. So, you know, I'm not their herald and defender. But neither am I going to allow some CBS newsman to suggest that you can only be a Christian if you go to Calcutta and take care of orphans. Why isn't he there? If you're good at changing diapers, go to an orphanage. But if you're an opera star, sing your heart out. I'm tired of some jackass deciding that Christianity takes only one kind of form. The kind that doesn't bother anybody in America and heads overseas and takes care of foreigners. So it made me mad. I mean, why isn't Morley Schaefer in some foreign land teaching boys and girls how to read and write so they can be journalists? And how much has CBS donated to Mother Teresa's orphanage? If it's so great, put your money where your mouth is. Spend the money it took to do a special on the NRB and just send it to Mother Teresa's orphanage. But it wouldn't get ratings, would it? Vacation didn't make me stupid. You better be glad I'm on TV. I can't stand the media. Now, we all gotta live night and day, morning, noon, and night with President Reagan's bowels. Why can't the media just get some simple good manners? Why do we have to follow the little scope inside the intestines of the president? Why do we have to listen to some doctor pontificate before the nation? He can go home when his bowel movements return to normal. If I were the president, I'd grab my pot and head home tomorrow before I'd put up with that stuff. No decency. Why can't experts that understand that get up and tell us the man had a growth removed from his stomach, sections of his colon, if they want to be profound, and he's doing fine, expected to be back in 7 days. And why can't experts to whom we have delegated those decisions decide whether or not he is able to function as president without some jackass newsman discussing all the little polyps in his belly? Tired of it. American public deserve more. Why do we have to be told that the president has some little old tube run up his rectum? With a flashlight spying around in his belly? Don't you get sick of this stuff? I mean, after all, the president shouldn't have to have those things talked about. We all know he has a belly. We all know he has a rectum. We don't have to beat it to death. Blood in his stool. I'm tired of it. You don't talk about the President of the United States that way. I don't even let you talk about your pastor that way. If I got blood in my stool, it's my business. You talk about me that way, you'll be blood on a stool. It ain't decent, that's what it ain't. You don't talk about the president that way. Do you realize what any one of these networks would pay if they could somehow do an analysis of God's innards? They like to put people down. Denigrating to the president to have Stoops describing his innards to the nation. I don't need all that anatomical detail. That's what's wrong, these news media people have got detail before the head. I think it's awful. I'm not done griping about it yet. I just think it's awful. And I think it's a commentary on the mentality and the indecency of the news media that show no restraint on any subject. They're the ones that'll bring control over the press. They have no sense of decency and no sense of restraint. Sick. Spare me taking a trip through the president's colon. I'm scared to turn the TV on tomorrow. We're going to see stool analysis all day long. Now, you think I'm not being serious, don't you? I'm very serious. That's why you got to keep me on TV. I mean, there are higher things to talk about. They're more much... I believe it is newsworthy that the president's facing an operation. I believe it's newsworthy, and the nation is concerned what the pathological test will show, whether it's malignant or not. I think it's newsworthy that cancer is in the family and that his brother went through a similar operation and is doing fine. I think it's newsworthy that he came out and is doing as well as 99% of those who face similar operations. I think it's newsworthy that he had a surgical removal of a polyp in his intestines and they discovered a larger growth. I don't think it's newsworthy whether he's getting good medical attention or not. I don't think it's newsworthy to play grandstand quarterback and try to decide whether or not they should have done thus and so. That's not newsworthy. I think the nation has a right to know the condition of its president. And I think the nation has a right to have his own doctors indicate whether or not, and experts in the field, it's life-threatening and what his condition is. I don't think it's decent to display and probe the innards of our president while he's on an operating table and in a hospital. And I think it's indicative of the sickness of the media that have made themselves God and live obsessed with the desire to put everybody on a little dissect table in front of them and expose everything about them. That and that alone is what made me take my stand some years ago in regard to the privacy and secrecy of our church. The news media's right to know has got some limits of decency on it. And they need to be mocked and belittled by the nation for simple bad taste. Hello. They're sick. Now, with that behind us, let me get on to less boring subjects. I'm not interested in the borings into the president. He's alive and well, and that's enough. Now, don't expect any news bulletins, church, if your pastor gets sick. All that you will ever be told is it's something either above or below the belly button. I want my privacy protected, and I think the president deserves a little bit. Now, I've had a vacation. I had a family vacation with my staff, and I've come home to rest. I now know what you go through when you take your kids on vacation. You did fair, but how many of you know what the date is? What's the date?
14.
Yeah. What's tomorrow?
15.
And what do we do on the 15th?
Satellite.
We pay the satellite bill. And a bunch of you people stood to say you'd send in money for me to go on vacation. And you took your tithe and put vacation on it. And you took the money you were going to give and put vacation on it. A few exceptions. But I can tell you, we don't want anybody giving except those that I teach. In about 6 minutes, we're going to join Washington, D.C. and a lot of other cities. And I'm going to start teaching. But we've got 6 minutes for the people that care, that know exactly what I'm saying. And you're just fleshly enough, if I'm not here to say it to you every day, you postpone or push aside. We're going to have a crisis tomorrow if I don't have the people that care about this ministry do what you do every month as the 15th rolls around. You got to get it in the mail tonight, or at the very latest tomorrow, for us to keep moving on. Memphis, we are scheduled to be in Memphis Saturday, 12 noon. I will forfeit the deposit and not go to Memphis unless a certain minimum number of reservations are made and confirmed. You say, well, how many does that have to be? Well, that's for me and God to know. I've been gone a week. There's always problems associated. I'm not going to Memphis this Saturday unless a minimum number of reservations come in today and tomorrow, and a word to the wise should be sufficient to those in Memphis. Same message to those in Nashville for the following Saturday. I have a certain minimum figure that I have asked God at my fleece, and if I don't have that confirmation, we'll be here in Glendale next Saturday, not in Memphis. Oh, you that have been confirmed will be called. And the message will be, you should have found three others to come with you. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Old Grumpy's home now. Get on the phone, tell him how much you love him. And the song is I Want to Know. And we got 5 minutes. That's it. Before I start teaching, for you to tell me what you're going to do, and you'll get it in the mail not later than tomorrow. Now, my face is going to revolve in a minute. And when I come back, I want you to get your phone calls done in a hurry. But I want to teach. back home again. Welcome to Washington, D.C., New York City, Dallas, Fort Worth. Three of the biggies just joined us. I've been on vacation. Took a bunch of my staff members with me, and now I know what it's like to have a family vacation. You play referee the whole time. But it was fun. And I'm glad to be back, and I want to be teaching tonight. But we've covered a lot of territory with reruns. You folks in Washington, D.C. have been able to catch up on some of the subjects we deal with. You folks in New York City, you folks in Dallas, Fort Worth, you've been catching up for a long time. Now, to those that have watched me and know how we do it, I only want people to support me that I've taught and who do it for the reasons that I've taught. Tomorrow is the 15th. I got home just in time to face the crises of the satellite payment on the 15th. For my regular people and only those that I've taught and know what they're doing, I need you to check in with me and tell me what you're going to do, what you'll have in the mail tomorrow. Rest of you, if you're glad we're back and ready to start learning some new things tonight, you get on the phone and talk to me. And I'm sure you've heard it. I haven't. But I've been pining for a 1-0. And all you folks in Washington, D.C. that are getting used to us now, and all you folks in New York City, and our old friends in Dallas and Fort Worth, if you're glad we're back and you're ready to settle in tonight, get on the phone and call me right now. I don't want to take very much time with this. One teach. All right, now I'm going to play it one more time. Your answer over at King's House 1 now. Well, I said take one more call. That's it. Some of you are still talking. So play old country church till they run down. This is it now. I want your attention when this song's over. Answer the phone at King's House 1. Interesting messages. Some people telling me everything they did all week long while I was gone. At least, almost everything. New York City, I'm calling from New York, wanted to tell him there was an article in the Village Voice. Well, send me a copy. I like to know what people say about me. And here's somebody calling, said you should have seen the shock caused by a recent guest on PTL. Tammy Baker was interviewing the new Miss World from Ceylon. It was all proper and dignified, traditional give-and-take chatting about the born-again experience of the guest until she slipped and said, hell, in the midst of a sentence. The horror on the faces of all was a delight to see. Some say that cussing's a sin. But tell me, how can that be true? For cussing has been in this world since the devil was told, go to hell. If it wasn't legal, then the lawyers able to. Prison would be full of folks that had a cuss or two. Oh, who had dropped a cuss or two? And if they didn't like it, then away the girls would run. If there wasn't plenty, then the filter would get none. Now listen to this. I'm doing this for this person, San Francisco. I've flipped past this channel for months, but I stopped to watch this afternoon. This is wonderful. Not weird anything. I could kick myself for missing out on this for the last 7 months. Some say that kissing's a sin. But tell me, how can that be true? Dallas, Texas. Really enjoyed the broadcast. My church said I committed the unpardonable sin, and I haven't been back. But I saw you a couple of weeks ago, and I really appreciate your teaching. But tell me, how can that be true? For kissing has been in this world since the very first day there were two. Now, if it wasn't legal in the lawyers, they would sue. Prison would be full of folks who had a kiss or two. And if they didn't like it, then away the girls would run. And if there wasn't plenty, then the pudding would get none. I'm tired of the news media forcing my head through the television screen inside the president's intestines. I mean, if nothing else, the president ought to be given the dignity of not having his bowel movements talked about on TV. I don't need some prune head in the media that has an uncommon interest in the innards of everyone to discuss these details. These prune heads should lift themselves above detail. I think it's awful. It shows no decency, no self-respect, no respect for the audience. I don't need to go with a little lighted tube into his intestines to be told he has serious operation, that he's recovering fine, and then when the pathological test comes in, it has more than a 50% chance of being cancerous, but they think they removed it all. And I'm quite sure all these diagrams and innards and bowel movement discussions and blood in the stool will not tell us any more about his condition than the pathological test will tell. And I'm tired of prune head lame brains on TV insulting and making the airwaves the vehicle of such subject matter. We don't need to discuss those things. And the President of the United States deserves the dignity of not having his bowels looked into by all the millions of people in America. That deserves saying twice. Some say that gambling's a sin, but I'll bet you 50-1 that gambling has been in this world since horses and greyhounds could run. Now, if it wasn't legal in the lawyers, they would sue. Prison would be full of folks who had it. Wait a minute, better too, if we couldn't. Oh, shut up! And if they didn't like it, then away the girls would run. And if there wasn't plenty, then the people would get none. You're substituting that clap for learning the words of this song. You say, I thought you was going to teach. Well, I am. I'm teaching on the seven deadly sins. That's the name of this song, and it's a famous song. It's a very old Irish song. It has ancientness attached to it. Some say that smoking's some say that smoking's a sin, but tell me, how can that be true? For smoking has been in this world since Adam taught Eve how to puff. Hey, we didn't sing that right. Some say that smoking's a sin, but a pipe now and then is enough, and a cigar too. That's what it said, wasn't it? That's the way it went. But a pipe now and then is enough, for smoking has been in this world. I'll guarantee you I'm the only television preacher in America that is instructing you in these things tonight. For smoking has been in this world since Adam taught Eve how to puff. Now, if it wasn't legal in the lawyers, they would sue. Prison would be full of folks that had a puff or two. And if they didn't like it, then away the girls would run. And if there wasn't plenty, then the children would get none. I want you to know, that song's true. You ought to see the way Craig Lamp and Ed Masry pilfer my cigars. But why can't we have some music? I know I'm singing good. You come over here and find one of them cracks instead of the note I'm singing in, Sam. You're going to get it. Some say. I really like my verse this morning. Some say vacation's a sin. That's flat. No, it stay where you was, it's just flat. But tell me, how can that be true? All vacations have been in this world since Adam a garden was in. Not very good English, but it rhymes. I have one legal in a lawyer, baby. Bring what we call a program. Down then to teaching a simple basis for faith in God without all that sin stuff. You know, I put them in the same class, the news media that want to take a little light on the end of a tube and send us down into the president's intestines looking for polyps. Then you try to get away from that. And the preachers want to spend all day dissecting us for our secret sins. Put it all in the same class. Surely there's something better to talk about on TV than that. Spiritual stool watchers. Well, am I the gone fishing? You ain't even close. You're not even close. All it takes is 1 week to get you guys out of it. Well, am I the gone fishing? I got to thinking it over. That road to the river. Thank you. might have gone fishing. I got to thinking it over.
Thinking it over.
Well, I rode to the river.
I rode to the river.
It's a mighty long way.
Oh,
yeah. Must be the season.
Must be the season.
Hey, well, I know the reason.
No rhyme, I know the reason.
Take it easy.
Take it easy.
Take it easy.
Take it easy.
taking it easy. It's my lazy day. That's enough. Stop. That's it. Stop. Stop.
One more trip to the river now.
It's way out there.
How far is it?
Too far.
Too far. Take your time and get on down there.
Too far.
Can you make it?
Turn to page 801. Promise number 71. I'm back to the promises again. If you got a Bible like mine, turn to page 801. If you don't, buy one. Everybody ought to have a Bible like mine. Can't waste time if you're trying to find the book. We got too many good songs to sing. Isaiah. Isaiah, chapter 49. You know, I hate bureaucrats, don't you? Just do that. Gene Scott was standing on the corner. On a manhole, jumping up and down saying, 49! 49! 49! A bureaucrat came walking down the sidewalk. They got to look into everything. They said, what are you doing? I said, it's fun. You'll never know by talking about it. Try it. Here, you get on the manhole, I said. They love to get on manholes. Yeah. Bureaucrats especially. So they got right there on that manhole. And they started jumping up and down, said, 49! 49! 49! As they got into it, they started jumping higher. 49! I reached over and pulled the manhole out, cover, that is. They went down. And I put the manhole cover back on and got on the manhole, jumped up and down, and said, 50! 50! 50! Washington was improved, and the budget had one less burden. Chapter 49, Isaiah. Listen, O isles, unto me, and hearken, ye people from far. Which islands is Isaiah talking about? He's prophesying in Israel. There ain't no islands in Jordan River. There ain't no islands in the Sea of Galilee. There ain't no islands in the Dead Sea. Well, a few rich vacationers floating around. And he said in the third verse, so you know who he's talking about, he said unto me, Thou art my servant, O Israel, in whom I will be glorified. Talking to him in the islands. Now, what's the subject I'm on? Lost tribes. Who are the lost tribes? They've been looked for centuries. Everywhere. Now, I think I've stayed on this subject longer than I normally do because I'd like to bring it to a certain point. You will never understand the Bible and God's faithfulness to His Word until you understand that there are certain critical points of departure. You miss them, you won't understand what follows. Somebody called earlier and says, what size hat do you wear? Smaller than this. 7 3/8. I don't know what this is. This must be large, made in USA. It sure is. It's large, all right. No, no, won't keep it. Maybe my head will grow into it. Then I'll have one. People have been looking for the lost tribes, wearing beanies, carrying money bags, going to synagogues, keeping the Sabbath, and acting like Jews. That's why they never found them. It's like looking for an elephant in an anthole. I think are probably as intelligent and as ambitious. They get things done just as much as a elephant does, but they're just not the same size. You don't look for elephants in ant holes. Don't look for the lost tribes by an oasis. Now in Leviticus, and the subject matter really behind all this is to show off God. I don't try to convert anybody. I figure if you can display God aright, He'll do it. I mean, to display God aright is like offering an air-conditioned car to a man walking in the desert. But if you try to find a guy walking in the desert and hitch him to your wagon and make him pull you, it ain't very attractive. And that's about the way Christianity's sold. God's irresistible if you see Him right. And one of the greatest displays of God's faithfulness to his word is the way he worked out his promises to the lost tribes. But most people don't even know what the promises are. They're just curious because they got lost. If they got lost, God's a liar. Back in Leviticus, God said that if they were not faithful when he took them into the promised land, he'd punish them 7 times. Now, that's not 7 times the same punishment. It's a calendar factor. And I've covered it before, so no sense going through it again. A day for a year, 360 years times 7. 2,520 years. And when that 2,520 years ran, the punishment period ran, and then and only then could you find the information sufficient to uncover these tribes that God had hidden, lost from you. But he couldn't lose them forever, because the promises God gave to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob were divided among the sons of Jacob, and the Jew, not yet named. You don't find the Jew called a Jew in the Bible until the kingdoms separate and the southern kingdom is at war with another northern kingdom, and the northern kingdom is busy killing citizens of the southern kingdom, and for the first time they're called Jew in the Bible. Abram wasn't a Jew. Isaac wasn't a Jew. Jacob wasn't a Jew. The name Jew had never been spoken. The name Jew had never been heard. You weren't a Jew until the southern kingdom was formed, and the citizens of the southern kingdom became known as Jews, and their descendants remained as Jews nationally, and converts to the religion fully developed in the southern kingdom became known as Jews. You never will understand the Bible, you get that straight. Now, God gave promises to the Jew, and all evangelical Christians find that it strengthens their faith to recognize God's faithfulness in his promise to the Jew. But he made a lot more promises to the non-Jew descendant of Abram. 1 Chronicles 5, Genesis 48 and 49 make it clear that the birthright passed to Joseph and his sons. And everything in the birthright, other than kingship and lawmaking, went to Joseph's sons. And as the Jew became the head, the descendants of Judah became the head of the southern kingdom, Ephraim became the head of the northern kingdom, until the lost tribes were called, before they got lost, synonymous with the house of Israel, they were called Ephraim. They were carried into bondage the last half of the 8th century B.C., resettled on the border between Iran and Assyria. Iran, peopled by those that are called in the Bible the Medes. Within 50 years after being settled south of the Caspian Sea and around the Lake Van area, 5.25 million of them at least. Where did the Jews come from? 50,000 came back from Babylon. 5.25 million of the northern kingdom plus captives from the southern kingdom were resettled between Iran and Assyria. When the flame is that far from your mouth, you've got to work on it a while. Or don't anybody think I'm a television evangelist? You think I'm succeeding?
Yes, sir.
Do I look like a television evangelist?
No, sir.
Hallelujah. Where'd they go? Everybody says they got lost. Hell of a hide-and-seek game. 5.25 million got lost. There weren't that many trees to hide behind in that area either. Now, if they got lost, the birthright got lost. And if the birthright got lost, God can't keep his word. And if God can't keep his word, there's no basis for faith. And without faith, it's impossible to please God or for salvation to come. God's concerned that we see his faithfulness. And God's concerned that his preachers point out his faithfulness. And this is an area totally neglected by the historic church, to their shame. The greatest display of God's power. Now, for 2,520 years, they were to stay lost from man's view. But the promises said they would become a great nation. Hosea 1 said that in the place that they were to be scattered to, they would become a mighty people as numerous as the sand of the sea. How do you lose that many people? I've said it before, but it's leading us up to this 71st promise tonight. Either God's a liar or this birthright people. And it's very clear the birthright does not belong to Judah. The Jew did not get the birthright. Read 1 Chronicles 5 and Genesis 49. The scepter and lawmaking went to Judah. That's irrefutable. The birthright went to the sons of Joseph, primarily to Ephraim. And in that birthright, they were to become a people as numerous as the sand of the sea. That's why Isaiah...